Formula E coming to Cape Town will gladden the hearts of motorsport fans. But there's more to it than just cars driving fast. I am Teresa Smith, and on this ESI Africa podcast, I talk to Ian Banner of sports promoter eMovement. We discuss the economic benefits of bringing the most environmentally conscious motorsport to the mother city and where the best vantage points are to watch all the action.
Welcome to the ESI Africa podcast, brought to you by your trusted power and energy multimedia journal. You can download this and all other episodes on esi-africa.com/podcasts. Let's get into today's conversation.
Hello, Ian Banner. Welcome to this ESI Africa podcast.
Thank you kindly for having me on.
So let's start with something simple. You are chairman of race promoter eMovement. What is the link between eMovement and the Africa Green Economy Summit?
Well, that's a fabulous question to start with. I'm going to use an analogy to answer that question. 22 years ago, I worked with a gentleman who had an idea to develop an Oscars of world sport. And he asked me what I thought. And I said to him, I think on its own, it won't work. It'll be a single stake in the ground and it'll fall over. However, I concluded after thinking about it for some time, if we have purpose at the center of what we do, which has manifested into something which today is called the Laureus Sport for Good Foundation, and if we have credibility in the form of an academy of legendary sportsmen and women, then we stand a chance because we have a tripod. That analogy, well, Laureus 22 years later, is a big organization, an impactful organization. We've helped about 6.5 million children around the world, and we support some 300 projects around the globe, including 35 in South Africa. In fact, as of yesterday's trustees meeting, it'll be 37 in South Africa. Why do I mention that? Well, fast forward to where we are today. When my partners and I had the chance to look at securing the race, Formula E, what I had in my mind was that the race on its own would be that single stake, very impressive and no doubt successful in of itself. But we don't own it. We are promoters promoting a franchise, essentially, of someone else. We needed to have purpose at the center of what we were doing. It took 2 years, frankly, to conclude what that purpose exactly would be. These things, good things take time. I'd like to think this is a very good thing because it's a movement for good. And it is called Go Green Africa. And Go Green Africa is a 365-day-a-year program. We have a manifesto, et cetera. We'll be developing that, but we're currently signing up founding partners, including our two biggest polluters being Eskom and Sasol and others, to come and join us to be a part of a movement for good that has a series of activities that showcase what going green is all about. And one of those activities is AGES that you asked about. So it's a long-winded answer to your question, but hopefully it gives your listeners some perspective.
Yeah, that does make sense, actually. And then the Africa Green Energy Summit happens around the time that the actual race will be taking place.
That is right. We've got, in fact, three large activations. One is an electric vehicle road trip, which is 10 days before the race, which will see 20 odd electric vehicles, 43 journalists traveling through the country, carrying a green baton representing electrical energy, green energy, I should say. And that's much like the Olympic torch relay. And they will travel to, you know, Megawatt Park and Sasselberg and other places, impact areas, to have notionally the board sign up to the manifesto of Go Green Africa. They will also pick up at each town or township or city a hero, and that hero will travel in the lead vehicle carrying the green torch to bring media attention to what we're doing. And over a period of 10 days, we see that creating a lot of interest in our movement, Go Green Africa, and ultimately in the race too. The other two activities are the eFest Electric. And Electric is a festival of all things e, OEMs, cars, one-wheeler scooters, bikes, motorbikes, et cetera, that are on display. And then we have Africa's Green Economy Summit, AGES, which is happening at Century City for 2 days, which is a serious, I'd like to say, workshop rather than talk shop, where we have some very powerful participants joining to deliberate on where we're at in our just economic transition. And we're focusing on e-mobility, on green hydrogen, and on off-grid real estate. Excuse me. So that gives you some perspective on what AGES is about. And then when that's all said and done, we roll into the race, which will be dynamite.
Now, I'm excited about Formula E race coming to Cape Town, but you could have chosen any place to actually put it. Why Cape Town?
I think Cape Town answered that question for you, not me. I mean, there's a reason Cape Town is voted by big international organizations, journals, etc., to be number one, two, or three most beautiful city in the world. It is naturally our most beautiful city in our country. And if you're going to try and send television pictures to the world, where would you choose to send them from? Table Mountain, Robben Island, the beautiful city of Cape Town, the stadium, the precinct around the stadium where the track is now prepared, frankly answers that question without any difficulty.
So now Formula E runs on street tracks and the track layout is designed for the cars. And do you think the originally proposed track design is what will be used? Basically, I just want you to describe the route that the cars will be taking, actually.
No problem. So the first thing was to, as you say, to look at existing city roads and see how those could be updated. And importantly, the city, who's been an integral part of what we're doing, they're our partners, and without them, this could not happen. And I'd like to put a shout out for JP Smith and Leonora D'Souza in particular for their incredible support. But it's part of an upgrade, a 2030 upgrade. In 2010, this precinct, which is a sporting precinct around the stadium, was developed or enhanced for the World Cup soccer. This is now part of a renewal. So what's going to happen 360 days of the year is that the new track is going to be, in fact, two lanes for traffic of cars and a lane for joggers and a lane for cyclists, because there's extra width now. So that's a benefit for throughout the year for visitors to Cape Town, Capetonians, et cetera, because loads of people are active in that precinct every day. So the track, the works are 95% complete. It looks amazing. We start on Flay Road. That's the start, and that's adjacent to the athletic stadium. We drive out onto Helen Suzman inbound, so the opposite side. We turn left, running all the way to the circle, the Giovanni Circle for your listeners. Inside that circle, down Granger Bay Boulevard past the big stadium, a chicane two-thirds of the way down, a very impactful chicane, down to the corner, which is onto the left Beach Road. And then a phenomenal run down turn 8, turn 9, turn 10, which will see the cars really reaching very high speeds. And I'll talk to that in a minute. And then once you can see Robben Island and you can see the ocean, etc., you get to Fritz Sonnenberg, which is the where you turn left off Beach Road to go to the golf club, the Metropolitan, and you turn left up Fritz Sonnenberg back towards the stadium, and then right into Flay Road to complete your lap. If you continue straight on Fritz Sonnenberg, you get taken to the pits, because the pits are between, are off Fritz Sonnenberg and running onto Granger Bay Boulevard. So that's the track. It's magnificent. It is adjudged by FIA to be the fastest, if not certainly one of the top two or three fastest circuits on their global calendar. And that's exciting because these cars are now running faster than Formula One cars from 0 to 200 kilometers an hour. And 322 Ks is the limitation that's put on them. They could go much faster, but it would burn up too much battery power. So this is proper racing. It's no longer the days of old. We had two cars and limited battery power. Still got limited battery power because of the speed and the draw. But Generation 3 cars launching for the first time in the first race in Mexico City in January.
Aha. Okay, we're going to come to Generation 3 cars in a second, but I was just wondering, since you're talking about this idea that it is going to be the fastest track, What's the best vantage points, though, for spectators to be watching the race then? Because you're talking about quite a vast space, and I would think that there are going to be spaces where you should be able to stand and watch and not get too close and still allow them to race properly. But where would people be able to see?
So I think it's important for your listeners to know that this is a full day's activity set of activities. We've got the Electric eFest Electric Festival, which will be great to visit. We have the Allianz Fan Villages, which are filled with activities and activations for people to enjoy. And then we have the qualifications, and the qualies in Formula E are really cool. It's a shootout where notionally you have the fastest car against the slowest car, just running 5 seconds behind each other about to see who can run the fastest lap. And whoever does qualifies for the next and the next and the next. So there's this knockout till eventually you have a quarter, semi and finals to get to the full lineup. So throughout the day, you've got qualifications going on, which are most interesting to watch. In terms of how do you watch best? Well, Flay Road, there are grandstand seats, 9,700 to be exact, that are on Flay Road, which gives you a vision of the start and the finish of the race. And of course, everything in between, terrific vantage points. There are grandstands on Helen Sisman, which also provide wonderful vantage points. And there are grandstands and hospitality viewing area down Granger Bay Boulevard on the stadium side. And then finally, in terms of grandstands, we've got all the way along Beach Road, a grandstand linked to a hospitality facility at CPUT. That is pretty isolated, but it's going to be magnificent viewing. And in fact, we're seeing people taking that up. So you can walk around, et cetera. There's obviously a red line, which is the external perimeter of our, let's call it infield or in race zone. But you can walk within that in dedicated areas and or outside of it, et cetera, to access different points. Finally, the A-track, which is at Greenpoint, the Greenpoint A-track, which is opposite the stadium on the town side, is a fan zone as well. It's an Allianz fan zone. That's a very reasonable 350 Rand ticket. Limited viewing of live racing. You get some viewing of it, but big screens, etc., you'll feel the vibe. So we've tried to make it accessible. The high-end tickets, we're told, are very expensive. But this exercise is a very expensive exercise to put out. Just having to build every single grandstand seat and have them manufactured is an expensive exercise. So we think we are offering South Africans an amazing opportunity to come and experience the fastest sustainable motoring event in the world.
So other than the utter joy of watching an open wheel street circuit race in Cape Town, how does presenting Formula E race in Cape Town benefit the city and the people of the city?
Well, just one small number, 4,907 people is the average number of people that travel with the Formula E ecosystem. You know, we bid to secure the race successfully, but I'm beginning to understand just how big this is. It's bigger than even I realized, and we've got lots of insights. It's a big deal. This is a serious global initiative. And very good for the city. We have a very large CapEx commitment going into 7.8 kilometers of barriers that are being built at Cape Concrete. We have fencing also for that distance, 7.8 kilometers of fencing that Quebeca are constructing in Black River for us. We have all the Tech Pro equipment that comes on and is inside the track. We've got all the manufacturing of grandstands, because there weren't adequate grandstands. We have all the infrastructure that's got to be installed, marquees, scaffolding, et al, power supply, massive amount of power required. So it goes on and on. This is going to have a very big economic impact on our country and in the Cape in particular.
So seeing as we're trying really hard to position Formula E as an environmentally friendly sport, how carbon neutral is it really to be flying the team to all corners of the world? Do you have any idea how Formula E deals with its carbon footprint?
Yeah, sure. Firstly, in the production of every element of what it does, there's a very strong sustainability consideration led by Julia Paley, who's the Director of Sustainability for Formula E. And they've pioneered some fantastic work in this area. To be a global series, you can't just race in one place every day or every week. You have to travel. And at this stage, travel is by aeroplanes and moving stuff around. But there's offsets. Obviously, carbon credits is a big part of achieving your ISO standards as well as your carbon neutrality, which they've been able to do. And it's the first race of its kind. And its mission is to promote sustainability and going green, and hence us creating Go Green Africa. To take others with us in this journey. And that's our next, and certainly my next major push over the next decade.
So let's get back to the cars. Back when Formula E first started, the first cars could manage about half a race and the driver would actually switch between two cars. And now with Generation 3 coming in Mexico, you say, they can actually complete a full race on in one go. So they're lighter, they're faster, they've got better battery power. Let's talk about some of the tech advances. Like, firstly, how much of a difference is there between version 1 and version 3? And do you think there's going to be a version 4 anytime soon?
Version 4 is already starting. The spec for the car is in discussion right now, most certainly. And I think it started in 2014, the series. And so we've had, this is in fact going into the 9th season. There's been 8 seasons to date. So you've already had, you know, 2 sets of 4 years of the 1 and 2 running. So obviously the whole battery performance is a significant part of the improvements that are being made. I'm a little bit on soft ground. I think it switched to McLaren, the battery supply. The chassis are all built by a crowd called Spark in Austria. And everybody asks, well, why did you get hold of Elon Musk and get Tesla involved, etc.? The answer is quite simple. Tesla's much bigger than all of this put together. He's doing his own thing. When we've got something to add, we'll be in touch with him. But right now, the series runs with a common chassis as well as a common battery pack. It's everything on top of that that the manufacturers, the original equipment manufacturers, can add. And that is the development work that carries from racing into into everyday vehicles, into production vehicles. So that's the reason that, apart from the brand identity, et cetera, but that's the reason the manufacturers are involved. And the same thing used to happen with Formula One and still does happen. A lot of technological seat belts, you know, fuel supply, all sorts of things came from Formula One world cars.
Yeah. So do you know what happened to version 1, version 2 of the car? Since, you know, sustainability is important, were they recycled or reclaimed in any way? Were they reused? Are they being used for practice?
Very good question that I cannot answer. I would need to ask, you know, I wasn't involved in the Gen 1 and Gen 2 cars, but we certainly can look into that.
Actually, it would be quite curious. It could be something cool to actually just display if it does move about with
them.
Yes,
of course.
So let's check about that and we'll get back to it.
Sure.
And then do you think, okay, I know this is a bit left field, but, you know, you're a fan, maybe you could actually answer this. Do you think the circuit will ever introduce a snow event? Because obviously Formula E is about pushing the limit of the cars and the cars' batteries. Mm-hmm. And Cape Town will be hot in Feb, but it doesn't quite count as extreme temperature when there's racing in Saudi Arabia and Hyderabad and Jakarta. I mean, that is like out there. But what they need is a snow event. I want to see, can the batteries, you know, manage it?
I think that's something for Formula E Extreme. You know, that's the right question to ask when they take the cars down to the Antarctica, which is planned.
Okay.
So Formula E Extreme is all about putting these cars through extreme conditions. And that's growing exponentially as well. Alejandro was the founder, really, of Formula E, and he also founded Formula E Extreme and is getting a lot of traction with that.
Okay. So now
Lewis Hamilton's team just won, by the way, the season.
Hmm.
And so he's excited about that.
Yeah. So now for you personally, what part of the race are you looking forward to the most?
I'm looking forward most to seeing the winning car crossing the finish line, because that means our job will be done. And it won't all be done, but we'll have delivered the race and we'll have had an outcome, and Cape Town will be on the world stage. And that's will be the culmination of 3 years of hard work from the entire team that's involved. So I think that'll be a time to celebrate. But until then, it's heads down and let's get the job completed.
Well, Ian, thank you so much for joining us. And it's been fascinating. And I think we will talk again.
With pleasure. I look forward to it. And I'll answer your questions about Gen 1 and 2 when we next talk.
Thanks.
Super.
You have been listening to an ESI Africa podcast. For the latest news, reports, and interviews on power, energy, and related industries, visit the ESI Africa website on esi-africa.com or follow us on social media. Until next time, thank you for tuning in.